This is the Afternoon Brief on High FM with Michael McKenna. Focused reporting, sharp analysis, and the local stories shaping our lives. Daily updates in a fast-paced world.
Let's take a look at South Africa this week. Crisis, politics, national pride, and it's our time, that time now for our weekly news roundup, where we unpack the biggest stories shaping the country right now or affecting the country right now beyond just the headlines. Well, joining us in studio, we welcome Eliezer Enfield. We've had Eliezer before on the show. Eliezer, just to recap, a third-year politics, philosophy, and economics student at Edgewas Bedford View. He's currently completing his work, integrated learning, right here at High FM as a news intern. Now, today, what we're going to be focusing on, three major stories, perhaps probably could fit in a couple more, but the three major stories dominating the national conversation this week. Johannesburg State of the City address, of course. There are growing concerns around leadership and the maintenance of the metro. Also, Parliament rejecting a motion of no confidence against President Cyril Ramaphosa. And a moment of national pride. Springbok coach Rassie Erasmus receives one of South Africa's highest honours. He wasn't the only one, but Rassie will be the focus of attention. That later on in the show. Right now, Eliezer, welcome back to the show. And how's your week been?
See, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be back. And my week has been good. Thank you for asking.
Okay, Joburg State of the City address. Let's start there. City in crisis. So Johannesburg Mayor Dada Morero's State of the City address, his SOCA address that took place yesterday. What stood out for you most about from that speech?
For me, it's just how out of touch it was with reality and the situation on the ground. I mean, as the politicians are always going to be like looking at it at a different level to we are, but this was on another level of delusion.
In what way? What were the key aspects? What was he really focusing on? What was he trying to promote? And what did he really not manage, or what should he have ought to have touched on?
So this is his final State of the City address, because the ANC have announced that he's not going to be the candidate for the local election. So for him, he was trying to paint a picture of all of his successes during office. Of course, the problem with this is that the residents don't actually want to hear this. So it's more a picture for the party, but but in general, I don't think that he read the mood of the city.
You mentioned the word painting a picture. Did he by any chance paint a positive picture or a definitive picture as to how, for example, we have water infrastructure issues? We've got, well, not just water, it's infrastructural issues in general, and we've got a notable decay of the city. Did he outline any plans to deal with that, to sort that out?
I didn't see any actual concrete plans. Instead, he focused on things that he claimed to have already done. So he said that response times are faster than ever and so on. It's very true, though, as you can see, the infrastructural decay is everywhere.
As a matter of interest, have you by any chance observed on social media what reaction has been to his State of the City address? What have you picked up there?
I haven't seen too much of that, although I would assume that it's quite negative. I mean, the average person in the city isn't actually going to be completely interested in something like this, because the politicians tend to say the same thing every year. So at some point, you just check out.
Interestingly, he made comparisons between Johannesburg and Cape Town. What do you think his attempt was there?
This is a very good question. I think it's because of Helen Ziller's entrance into the race. Of course, we have mentioned it before, but much of her campaign has been her showing this is the way that the Cape Town Metro works, and this is the way that the Johannesburg Metro doesn't, and this is how I'm going to implement this. So he's trying to push it back on her, but of course it is backfiring at the moment.
How did he brag about that? What pluses did he bring up regarding Johannesburg in comparison to Cape Town, for that matter? Did he raise anything?
There were two details in particular. The one, he said that more people have moved to Johannesburg over the last year, I think, than Cape Town. So it was 14,000 compared to 11,000. And then the second one is that The unemployment statistic increased by less in Johannesburg than in Cape Town. It was 0.9% as opposed to 1.6%.
We look at this as a political farewell at the same time. He's not really, I think, in the running for the candidacy for mayor. But let's just look at that a bit closely. So one of the biggest revelations is that it may have been Morero's final State of the City address, with reports suggesting, well, he won't be the ANC's candidate going into local elections. So what does it say about instability or stability or lack of, yeah, we can keep going on that one, in Johannesburg's politics right now? What do you see there?
We're in an era of what's called revolving door politics. So the mayoral seat has become a sort of merry-go-round that's passed between big parties to small parties. We've had everybody from Morero himself to mayors from parties like Al Jamar, which have been dubbed puppet mayors. Even the DA themselves have had a hand in this. We had Mpor Palatse, and we had Home Mashaba, and even them, none of them lasted a full term.
But now the question begs, Eliezer, how damaging is that level of political turnover for governance and service delivery in a city? How important is that, and how detrimental is it, for that matter? What are we facing?
Well, it is extremely detrimental. That's because if you're a civil servant, for one, there's a breakdown in the hierarchy because you don't know who to answer to. One month, you've got one mayor who's calling for a certain policy. The next month, they're calling for next. So this also leads to a breakdown in long-term planning because they all know they're not going to be here by the time the next election comes.
Interesting times indeed. Let's see what the city of Johannesburg, what destiny holds for it. Let's look at no confidence motion rejected. Well, the motion explained. Now let's look at Parliament, where Speaker Toko Didiza rejected the ATM's motion of no confidence against President Ramaphosa. What exactly was the ATM arguing then?
So they said that Ramaphosa's continued stay in office undermined transparency, accountability, and rule of law. And this is in terms with the Palapala, like, scenario, which we discussed a bit last week or so.
Indeed. Well, the ATM did accuse the Speaker of protecting the President from accountability, while Didiza says the issue is already being dealt with through the impeachment inquiry process. Is this politics, procedure, or a bit of both, or something else at play? What are you reading into that?
So, as usual, I think we already know what my answer is going to be, but it is a bit of both. So, on one hand, the Speaker is right. There is already going to be a process against him in terms of the impeachment inquiry. In America, there's a concept called double jeopardy, which I don't know if we have it here, but it speaks to whether or not in a criminal matter, whether you can be held accountable for the same crime twice. Now, this is not exactly the same thing because we don't yet have any definitive proof of criminal conduct, but it's a similar situation. At the same time, I think that the public would like to see this happen because it does look like the president's being protected.
You know, speaking of the public, I mean, it just occurred to me as you were outlining that, looking at public trust in Parliament, I mean, moments like this, do they further damage public trust in Parliament, political accountability, especially with this ongoing frustration around Palapala and government transparency, as well as other government responsibility issues that the public is facing? What do you make of that?
So when it comes to this issue, it's often is the optics over the actual substance. So there is actually the impeachment inquiry that's going to happen. We don't know yet if that's going to happen because the president's judicial review. But that is, so it does on the face of it undermine accountability. There is also the element here where they're probably scared of the GNU itself, because for the impeachment, we'll see the evidence come up. But for this, it would just be a simple vote, which the Speaker hasn't even allowed. So if the DA were now to reject a motion of no confidence, it would look very bad.
Interesting. You know, one wonders about the president's position right now, politically speaking. How vulnerable do you think Ramaphosa is right now within both Parliament and the ANC itself? Where do you think he stands amidst all this?
Within the ANC, I think he's pretty secure. We've seen them closing ranks around him. I don't think they want to get rid of him because they know that it could lead to them losing power. There's a growing radical economic transformation faction behind Paul Mashatile, But the likelihood of that faction overthrowing Ramaphosa at the moment isn't that high. However, the parliament as a whole is a different situation altogether, because the GNU is still reliant on the support of the Democratic Alliance. And Jordan Hill Lewis came out and said that the leader of the DA, of course, he came out and said that in the event that evidence is uncovered, that the DA won't protect the president.
Do you think an impeachment is gonna succeed here? Well, how do you, from what you're looking at on the ground, from the parliamentary processes to the legal, you know, attempts by the president and his legal team itself, where do you think this, where do you see this ending up?
It's hard to see at the moment. I can't see the impeachment itself succeeding, purely due to the fact that the rule at the moment is that you need 66% of parliament to vote in favor of it. So first there's the inquiry, then there will. It'll be, I think, a decision on whether or not it goes to a vote. And then once it goes to a vote, then you'll need 66%. But if you do the math, even if the DA vote yes and the rest of the opposition parties vote yes, you'd still need a significant chunk of the ANC to vote with it, which would be obviously dangerous to their own standing and power.
Indeed. Okay, let's begin to, well, conclude, wrap up. Maybe I'll have a few more questions for you. But now, let's look at some feel-good news. Rossi Erasmus receiving the Order of Ikhamanga. And, well, Springbok coach Rossi Erasmus has been awarded this Order of Ikhamanga in gold. Just how significant, do you believe, is this honor? Let's begin there.
Okay, so, of course, we all need some good news. It's quite a lot to just sit here looking through every political story, because it does get a bit depressing sometimes. So when it comes to this award, it is not the highest overall civilian honor, but it is, that would be the Order of Mapungubwe, but it is the highest in the field that Dr. Rossi Erasmus is in.
If you look at the history behind Rossi Erasmus, he's become more than a rugby coach for all of us. Why do you think he resonates so deeply in public? What's his talent? What's his gift?
So he is like a vision of like a different South Africa to the one that we've been discussing earlier. The idea that South Africans of all race, religion, creed, and background can unite together under one common goal and succeed.
You know, we often talk about sport uniting South Africans. Now, do you think the Springboks still play that role now, the way they did after the World Cup wins? Their brand, do you think it's still as strong out there? It still gives one that hope of, well, that sense of morale and positiveness.
Of course. I mean, if you see even the, like, singular matches, how much it means to people. Whenever they lose, the entire country goes almost into a national depression, even if it's just one game or one try. That's how much the Springboks mean to people.
You know, when you look at this week's stories collectively, leadership struggles, political accountability, and moments of national pride, as we've just outlined now, what do you think they tell us about the current mood of South Africa right now? It's a bit of a hodgepodge at the moment. You know, is this happening, but there's also, wow, this happening. Where do we find ourselves in that respect?
It's easy to say that on the face of it, the mood is quite low, but I also want to end on a positive note. So it's always prudent to remember that every country, South Africa included, is bigger than one government, one political party, one era. And that is sort of what the Springboks and that kind of stuff represents, is whatever happens now, we'll get through it because we've been through worse.
If I can just ask you one more question from an international perspective before I let you go. On a broad basis, if we look at now what's transpiring in the Middle East now, we've got Iran looking at a revised nuclear deal plan, if you can put it that way. The president warning that they'd better accept or else. Where do you see things going in that respect right now? Because Israel's also been talking about preparing for confrontation. Is there any sign of an end to this conflict? Has diplomacy now, has it now been pushed aside? Are we now looking at a unique confrontation at this point in time? I dread to say it, but yeah, are we heading for worse times or confrontational times, if I can put it that way?
The problem with diplomacy is that it assumes two rational actors. Mm. And you can't have a state like Iran declare we want to wipe Israel off the map and then say that Israel needs to negotiate something with them. You're not going to get anywhere. So at the moment, I can't really see without the removal of the IRGC from the picture, things getting better for either the Iranian people or us around the world, which is unfortunate.
Sure.
Because there's a lot of history.
Indeed, indeed. Johannesburg's political uncertainty, as we've unpacked. Accountability battles in Parliament. Proud moments in our rugby field. And of course now, what is transpiring in the Middle East? Where to from here? Well, it's certainly been another week packed with stories shaping the national and international conversation for that matter. Eliezer, thanks so much for joining us in studio once again. Eliezer Enfield joining us for this week's edition of the Weekly News Roundup here on The Afternoon Brief.